Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Charissa Sebastian Deppen. She's the CEO of Leadership Mastery Alliance, a company specializing in supporting introverted servant leaders who are women in corporate leadership. She's a leadership and executive coach with over 15 years of corporate leadership experience, in addition to coaching several Fortune 100 leaders and executives. Tune in to discover, first, how clarifying your personal and team values can transform how you approach challenges, aligning decisions with shared purpose for more meaningful outcomes. Second, understanding the distinction between mattering, your unique contributions, and belonging can deepen both individual impact and team connection. Finally, learn a powerful approach to unlocking your superpower through three steps that provide clarity on your unique strengths. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Charissa Sebastian Deppen. Charissa is the CEO of Leadership Mastery Alliance. She's done some cool TED Talks. I just listened to one today. And Charissa, you're a member of the Forbes Coaches Council and a writer. So you're doing a lot of great work across a lot of great teams. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate the opportunity, and I just love what we're about to get into, the topic that we're going to discuss today. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on and to have the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. So maybe for the benefit of our listeners, you can share a little bit more about your story. How did you come to be doing all of this really cool work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start where, as far as what I studied in my background there. So I was actually, I have a tech background. I started off as a software engineer. That's what I went to school for. And then from that place, I started off in software engineering as my very first profession, and then moved into technology leadership, where I actually spent the majority of my corporate career. And towards the end of that time in technical leadership, there were a lot of things that were working, but there were also a lot of things that just weren't working well. And I couldn't quite put my finger on why I was, kind of heading towards burnout. I was so stressed. I was just drained every day. I was exhausted by, just being spread way too thin. And so the things that I did love, though, was the innovation, the innovation part of tech. I loved working with my teams. I loved the leadership aspect of it as well. And so towards the end, though, when I did start to feel like something just wasn't quite right, I actually ended up finding a coach. I knew nothing about the coaching profession at that point in time, other than on the sports field. But what happened was I found a Groupon of all things. I was scrolling on Groupon, not looking for anything like that. I happened to see an ad for a coach, a career coach, and he asked all the right questions. He was talking about, he asked questions like, do you feel stuck in your career? Are you not sure what the next step should be? Do you need clarity on what that, what your next step in your career journey needs to look like and things like that? And I was like, oh my goodness, you're in my head. How did you do this? And so that's when I reached out for some support in that area, just to try to figure out, okay, what is really going on here? And do I need to make a change? And so through that whole coaching process, a lot was uncovered as far as how I'm wired and, what's important to me, my values, who am I, what are my strengths, what are the things I really enjoy doing? Like, there's so much that that he helped me to discover about myself. And that led to a lot more clarity on what would be the right fit for me. And interestingly enough, the coach that helped me to do this gave me enough of a taste of coaching that I was like, you know what? A lot of this actually lines up, and I would love to do your job.
Yeah.
So fast forward through that whole process, I enrolled in coaching school, and the very first weekend that I was, at that in-person class, I was like, oh my goodness, these are my people. I love this. This is how I want to make a difference in the world. And so that's how I transitioned from the corporate world into starting my own business. And I basically started off in the career coaching space and then transitioned into leadership. And now I specialize in helping introverted servant leaders in particular mainly because so much of that is my own journey. I struggled so much before I realized that the things that I was, you know, I was comparing myself to other people and thought that I wasn't good enough in so many areas, when really those were my superpowers. There were so many strengths I didn't recognize and I didn't know how to leverage in that space. And now I help those introverted leaders who just have a heart for people, are very people-focused leaders, figure out how to navigate in that space, how to play to their strengths, how to function in what I call their leadership zone of genius once they understand who they are and how to show up at their highest potential, and then how to engage at work so that they have that highest level of impact and influence while just focusing on, you know, like engaging in work and having that servant leadership perspective. So that's what I do now. And that's why I love the work I do. And I'm so passionate and engaged in all of the different aspects of it.
It's awesome. And that particular focus that's emerged around the introverted servant leader is really fascinating. I was listening to a podcast this morning. It was Adam Grant's Work Life, and he had Jane Goodall, the lady who went and lived in the jungle with all of the gorillas, right?
Yes, yeah.
And she was talking about how in some of those communities, there'd be a dominant male that would rise to the alpha in that group through a lot of physicality. But actually, there are a number of other members of that community who were just great leaders and very caring. And actually, the leaders who got to the top through the more caring, more servant leadership, you know, style of being in their community stayed leaders for longer. And I thought that was fascinating, given that you touched on burnout earlier as well. So, you know, there's and you were saying before the show that there's this increasing self-awareness around, you know, embracing our strengths and creating these opportunities for our team. So it's a fascinating space in leadership, which gets a lot of lip service, but probably isn't getting attention and time in teams in terms of how we're developing leaders in a lot of organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. And you just touched on a really good point there. And from a coaching perspective, it does take a leader to have that level of self-awareness, but also to be so invested in their own growth and development that they're willing to do the work, right? To get to that place where they don't just have their own level of self-awareness on their strengths and how they show up, but they can then engage with their team and figure out and understand the people that are reporting to them in a way that's going to help them to create the types of environments that are going to, you know, increase engagement and help their teams feel like that's a place where they belong and they can really thrive. So yeah, that's such a good point. It does take that level of awareness and then commitment from a leader's perspective to engage in some kind of process. It doesn't have to be coaching, but just be, you know, invested in their own development in order to then make a difference.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. And when you talked about your experience with your coach early on, you talked about how I'm wired, my values, like personal values. Yes. We don't talk about that a lot in business. So can you explain a little bit more about, in that occasion or in the work that you now do with team leaders, how you dive into personal values?
Absolutely. And also, this has a correlation to team values, and I'll get to that in a second as well. Mm-hmm. But the other thing I wanted to touch on when it comes to values is I had this aha moment at the beginning of my journey of that, you know, like that introspection and try to figure out, okay, how am I wired and what, you know, how can I how can I get clarity on the things that are not working for me? And one of the things that one of my coaches helped me with so much is making values-based decisions, or at least when I'm making a decision, to look at it through the lens, like one perspective to have is to look at it through the lens of my own values. Because if you do that, you have a lot more peace when you walk away from that, regardless of the outcome of that decision. When you feel like you're making the best decision based on the information that you know at the time, but also aligning with what's important to you. And that can be, if you think about it in terms of the type of team that you want to create or the type of leader that you want to become. And if you can define that, and if you can be clear on what that looks like for both your team and yourself, and then make decisions from that place of like, okay, how well are we aligning on what we have committed to or what we've, you know, what we've said we really believe in, then it just makes it so much easier, because no matter what the outcome is, you can walk away from that knowing like, okay, but if it didn't work out the way we would like, that's still a learning opportunity. And both ways, right? So we're walking away knowing that we made the best, or I made the best possible decision based on what's important, so that no matter what, that is the legacy that we leave behind, right? It's not so much about the outcome or whatever it is. It's more about how do you handle those situations when it is, you know, when it's tough, when things don't work the way you do, but you can always rely on your own, you know, and your own values and your own like North Star, right? The things that are important to you. So that freed me so much and took away so much stress, because when I started to look at my decisions through the value-based lens, it just changed everything for me. You know, I was no longer looking at it through a very narrow lens of like, okay, what does this ideal outcome need to be? I broadened it out and said, okay, what's important to me and how do I step into the space and make the very best decision for me and the people around me from a place of integrity and a where I can really be proud no matter what the outcome.
Yeah, which is great. Awareness is another word that comes to mind, but it's also a great framework for getting ready for big decisions and potentially to your point on how personal values impact team values. Mm-hmm. For exploring decisions with a team as a learning moment, you know, even before you make them.
Yes. And that's another thing. And I love that you brought it back to the team values, because that's something I always encourage my leaders. Whenever they talk about, like a lot of times I'll have leaders that come in to a coaching session and I'm like, okay, well, you know, what would you like to chat about today? Or is there something in particular that's top of mind? And, you know, I always get the usual challenges, you know, like those team dynamics, or I really want to have more engagement with my team and all of that. So one of the places I love to start is, first of all, understanding the dynamics of your team, understanding your individual team members, how they work together, but then also coming together and discussing a common ground. So what I mean by common ground is things like team values. What do we stand for? What do we want to be known for? How do we even want to handle conflict and disagreements, right? Whether that's between the team or even as we engage with cross-functional teams and other partners and things like that. So having these the foundational groundwork and doing that work ahead of time with your team can not only reduce so much stress, but it can create a more like more synergy in your team and get everybody on the same page, so that when tough times come and when difficult decisions need to be made or you need to have a difficult conversation, you can always go down to that foundation. Okay, of like who we are, we all decided, you know, we all came together and decided this is the foundation. These are the rules of the game, or this is how we want to kind of, you know, engage in the workplace. And so once you have that common ground, it's so much easier to then lead from that place and increase that team engagement. And also your team can shine from that place as well, right? You can be known as that team that works not just so well together, but engages really well with other people as well and other teams.
I like that one. I've had Mark Cruz on the show from Atlassian, and they're about all things team right now.
Yes.
And he was sharing what the work they do around work agreements, which I would imagine encapture some of those pieces that you talked about when you're creating the kind of groundwork in the team.
Mm-hmm. And it also makes it really, it makes it a lot easier to onboard new members of the team as well, right? So when you have that foundation built, it makes it easier to say, okay, this is who we are. It's not that it won't change. There's always going to be, I always tell my leaders, you do need to kind of check in and see, okay, does anything need to be changed periodically and all of that?
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you're introducing people into your team, when you already have laid that foundation, it just makes it so much easier for them to then, you know, kind of plug in and also just shine in that space when there's so much clarity and alignment around what the expectations are and what, you know, what everyone stands for and what the team's about. And it's a great selling point too, right? It's a great way to introduce people into the team and say, this is who we are. If you feel like this is aligned with who you are and what's important to you, we would love to have you, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that's a big deal.
I think it's great for selection, for onboarding, and then for improvement, because as you bring in diverse thought, diverse experience into the business, what you had set out 18 months ago to be your way of working in the team may be changing, and maybe some of that new talent coming in is going to inform you of, well, in my last business we saw this, and you know, this may inform that decision to adjust one of those, you know, pieces of groundwork.
And that actually, you just made me think about something else that could actually be one of the team values, right? Adaptability, flexibility. So that when things change, it's, you know, it's worth taking a step back and having a conversation about, okay, how do we, if that's one of our values, how do we keep aligning with those values when there are changes that are happening around us?
Yeah. It's interesting. I love your view on this, Charissa. Sometimes values can either look very close to or almost get confused with a capability. So adaptability could be deemed a capability of the team, but it could also be a value. Or they could be confused with an objective. Hey, we want to be a more adaptable team. How do you work with those leaders to kind of, you know, create clarity between, you know, the value, the capability, the objective? How does that tie up?
Got it. Okay. So I will say, I'll say this ahead of time before I go into the actual answer to the question. But this is just my view on this. So there's lots of different takes on, you know, the differences between the two. But the way I view it is that our values are it's almost like principles, right? The things that we stand for, the things that we believe in. So, and those shouldn't especially personal values, those are things that shouldn't really change drastically over time too much, right? The things that are just personally really important to us. We as an objective is more tied to action. So if you have a specific objective that ties to that value, that aligns with that value, then there's a way to kind of measure, okay, am I tracking, am I aligning with that value in a tangible way, in a way in which I can see, okay, there is a specific objective. And if I'm heading towards that objective and meeting that objective, then that tells me that I'm aligned with the value. And then the capability is your ability to line up with that value, if that makes sense. So so are you capable, and in what ways are you capable of taking a value and something that is important or a principle or something that matters to you and making that actionable? Do you have the ability to do that? And what does that look like? So that's my attempt at kind of breaking down the three things. So hopefully that makes
sense. I like that. It's very crisp too, because it actually shows a relationship then from like values leading into the objectives. And then you kind of bridge the capabilities across the team.
Right.
To get there in terms of how you plan the work and go forward.
But I love that you brought up capability, and this is something that I haven't touched on too much, even just in my coaching. So this is such a great reminder for me too. But the capability piece, I think that's really critical, especially in a team dynamic, because it's one thing, and I think we've all heard this, right, where you have companies that will come up with, do this great values exercise, and then they come up with the values, and it sits on a wall somewhere, right? And there's no correlation, there's no connection between that and something that's actionable and the capabilities. I love that you brought up that word, because that is something to consider when you're working in those, in that team dynamic. Is number one, what does that mean? What is that value? If you're establishing values for the team, what is their level of understanding? How did they interpret it? And then how do they view that as actionable? In what ways do they action on it? And what do the capabilities of, because everyone's so different, right? Everyone's going to interpret that differently. Everyone's going to probably action on that a little bit differently, potentially.
Yes.
And then also everyone's going to have different capabilities when it comes to how that's played out. So I think that level of alignment and clarity across the board and giving your team the space to be able to have those conversations and communicate is absolutely critical. And part of that, part of the, I think the important thing to consider in that situation when you're setting that up and having that conversation or setting up the environment for that conversation is the psychological safety part of it. Because these are deep conversations, right, with your team.
Oh, yeah. So
you want to make sure that they feel comfortable and you're doing your part to create a safe space where they feel like, they can brainstorm. They can basically just throw out ideas and things like that. And some of them are going to stick and some are not. And so creating that space and environment where they know what the intention of the exercise is and they can feel free to just have a conversation and then maybe connect the dots later, right? So bring it all together at a little bit of a later point. But these are great points, great areas to focus on when it comes to values, capabilities, and objectives. And of course, there's so much more to unpack in those areas. But I love that you brought up those particular terms because I think that definitely matters.
No, thank you. And matters is a really important word. I love that you ended on that there, Sharissa, because a lot of my attention now going into the new year is on mattering. And I actually see mattering and mastery as kind of tied together. What I've been identifying through some podcast guests and through some of my own research this year is that mattering, quite different to belonging, is about, feeling like your contribution in the work that you do is important and significant. And where belonging is more about, I feel accepted and seen and comfortable here amongst these people. So I would imagine that when you're starting to do the values work and you're starting to get some of these team agreements in place, it creates more space for the leader to work with the team members and really explain to everyone and give everyone that opportunity to prove where their work is important and significant to their colleagues or even to teams, outside of their team in the organization. Have you got a view on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I also like that you touched on two different terms, and I think they do obviously relate in some way. So when it comes to mattering, the way that I talk about that in my coaching practice and with my leaders is in terms of meaningful work, right? And what that means, not just from a leadership perspective. So in other words, as a leader coming in and letting the team know, not just as individuals, but when they come together, what does that mean for the team and what does that mean individually? Like, you know, as far as what is that outside perspective to the, you know, the meaning that their work has or the value that they, their work provides to the organization, to that leader and all that, but it works both ways, right? So, and that's why I love the coaching perspective, because one of the things that's so powerful that a leader can do, if they ask the right questions and stay in that curiosity and wanting to understand, you know, mindset, is they can ask, you know, the individual team members and then also come together as a team to say, what does meaningful work mean to you? Right.
Yes.
And because I think that connects with mattering, because if they feel like they are doing meaningful work, or there's a component of their work or even the team itself that has meaning to them, where they can feel like, you know, not just that sense of belonging, like you mentioned, but also in terms of the fact that they, the work and when they show up at work, it, you know, their contribution and their presence even is really valued and appreciated. I think that really makes a difference. But it goes both ways. It's both from a leadership perspective for the leader to be able to then let, you know, let them know where they fit in and the value and all of that, but it's also for a leader to be able to come in and ask them, because I think that really is going to make a big difference as far as it's going to give, you know, the leaders the ability to then lead them in a way that's going to be a lot more impactful if they're hearing directly from them about what matters in their own words, so that they can then, you know, key in on that and make sure that they are getting the support that they need that aligns very well with what is meaningful to them, and of course creating a space where they feel like they belong as well.
Oh, I like that. I like that practical sort of actionable approach to just asking people what meaningful work means to them, because so often team members just take the work that's given to them or take the work they're perceived to be, you know, given to do, but they don't really ask. We don't do a very good job in teams of clarifying, let alone the definition of the task and the conditions of satisfaction, but how does it then fit into the rest of the, you know, the jigsaw puzzle of what the organization does.
Yeah, that's so good. And that kind of makes me think about aligning with mission and value. So having, it goes back to that exercise we were talking about earlier about aligning the team right from the beginning and having those ways of working and things like that, but also aligning with a vision and a mission for the team specifically that obviously would, you know, it would hopefully align with the bigger organization's mission and vision and things like that. But just as a team, right? How do they define that? And so that can also be kind of a North Star as far as like, what are the things that are important and that matter to the team and how do they feel like their work ties in with that vision and mission if they are already connected with that. So that, again, it goes back to the meaningful work, right? So if they feel like they have a part to play in whatever that vision and mission is, and they feel connected to that personally, then it just makes so much of a difference.
Oh, big time. It actually takes me to a bit of a hypothetical. I've spent a fair amount of time in and around humane societies. My wife loves to rescue animals. And using that as an example to explore sort of belonging, mattering, and then go on to mastery, because I'd like your view on that. You can have a humane society where everyone feels like they belong because they're all here doing work that is helping these animals and putting these animals back into loving homes, and they're caring for them when they're in transition. So everyone feels like they belong, but some people might not feel like their work matters because they're, you know, running around collecting blankets or cleaning out stalls, and it's just like, yeah, it's here, but if I wasn't here, someone else would do it. So but other people will have a much greater degree of mattering because, hey, this is the person who works with dogs that are coming in that are highly anxious and calms them down and allows them to have better meetings with families. So if you take that example of a high belonging environment where some people matter and other people maybe feel like they matter less, How do you then kind of introduce mastery? Like, where is it that person that is the dog whisperer that does the work with the anxious dogs, or is it other roles on a team? Is it the role of the leader? How do you see that kind of fit into that framework?
Oh, that's a great question. So the one thing that kept coming up as you were describing that example, and that's such a good example of this, is the connection with mission. So you could be, and there was a story a long time ago, and I'm just trying to remember like the details of it, about a janitor at the Kennedy Space Station, right? And I think it was, I can't remember who, the details are getting lost on me right now. I can't remember the exact details, right? But he was so on mission, even though he was sweeping the floors and, you know, cleaning up and things like that. But when he was asked, you know, what do you do? Yeah, he said, you know, I think it, the story goes that the president asked him, you know, what he does there. And he said that, you know, my mission is to get a man on the moon. And so I was like, wow, that just gave me chills, right? So I think if you're, and regardless of the actual job that you're doing, if you have a tight connection and a passion for the mission of the actual work, there's a way in which you can, and of course, there's a lot of other elements to that as well, right? So the your leadership also has a part responsibility in creating an environment where you feel like your work does connect strongly with the mission, even if you feel like it's, you know, it's a small part of a bigger picture. But if you feel like that, you know, if you are so aligned with the mission and whatever that end goal is and that end result, even if you don't, there's no direct like line or strong correlation between what you're doing and the end result of that. But if you feel like, okay, I'm at least paying a part of that, and if your leadership and the support team around you, like maybe your coworkers or whoever else it is there to help you and support you and encourage you, especially when it gets tough, I think that that can really help. I just love that that idea of like being just so on purpose and on mission. I can even speak from my own experience with this as well. I will tell you, like a lot of people, especially when I talk about, you know, working with introverted 70s, and I get the question of, but you don't seem like any, like I always say, like that comes from my own story and my own challenges that I had. And I had such a passion now, right, for helping leaders that are in that space. And a lot of times I get people who say, you don't come across as, you know, an introvert. And it just, I would never have guessed that. And I always tell them, for me, that connection was with my mission and my purpose. When I found that and I discovered that, I was like, oh my goodness, I will take any stage as long as my focus is on that one person. If there's one person listening right now, or there's one person that's receiving a message or reading an article that I wrote and it's helping one person, then I'm going to stop at nothing to, you know, to get it out there. I'm going to get over myself and my own fears and insecurities, because my focus is not on me. It's on the mission, the purpose, and the one person. Even if it's just one person that I'm helping, that's where my focus is going to go. So I think in a work environment, if you can connect with that mission, and if you feel like you're not connecting, there's something that's just not right. And actually, I was in that place, you know, in my corporate career. It's not that I wasn't doing good work or meaningful work. I just personally didn't connect with that, you know, with that work and at the time. And that's okay too. It doesn't mean, and actually I was chuckling inside when you were talking about the Humane Society, because my family laughs at me because I'm not naturally an animal person. I mean, I love animals, but I'm not the person who you're going to find on the weekends, you know, like volunteering at the Humane Society or anything like that. So, you know, my family just likes teasing me about that. They're like, how is that possible? And I'm just like, I'm just not wired that way, you know? And that's okay. That's perfectly okay. You can do that, or you can be in a job right now where you're like, yeah, the mission is great. And, you know, yeah, I feel like I'm impacting it in some way, but you might not feel the connection. And that's okay. But I can tell you that when you do the work to either align with that mission or align with, you know, maybe that you're not in the right place and you align somewhere else and you can really get connected, it just changes everything. The way you show up can change. Your level of confidence can change. Your resilience, you know, your ability to just move forward regardless of, you know, of difficulty and things like that, just skyrockets. At least that's what I've seen from my own experience. And that's what I see in my leaders as well. When I help them find that thing that lights them up, you know, the level of impact just goes through the roof.
That's very cool. I know Daniel Pink talks to like purpose with a big P and purpose with a small P, big P being the company-wide purpose and small P being more your personal purpose. Do you see the same true of mission? Do you see individual leaders who have a company mission, big M, and then maybe have a small M mission, like the personal mission that, you know, the impact they're trying to bring to the world, you know, which work is only a part of, you know, they do stuff outside of work too?
Oh, yes. I definitely have a lot of leaders that are multi-passionate, multi-talented. You know, they do lots of different things outside of work as well. And I love that because they're willing to explore. They're willing to open themselves up to, you know, to other things. And also, just test it out. And I always say, like, never be afraid to experiment. It doesn't matter where you are in your career and all of that. Mm. But experiment, whether that's within work or outside of work, to find, you know, that your areas of flow, right? The areas where you just feel so engaged, where you feel like you can really just contribute, or even just the areas that you feel energized just feel like this, even if it doesn't necessarily, if you feel like it doesn't matter that much or it's not that big of a deal, if it energizes you and fuels you in some way, it's making a difference, right? It impacts the way you show up. It impacts how you engage with others. So yes, I definitely have had, I coach a lot of leaders who just experiment with lots of different things, or they have passions outside of work, and it absolutely impacts how they show up at work for sure. So going back to what you were saying about the big M and the small M, a lot of times with, you know, in my experience, what happens is there is a connection in it from a work perspective with the big M mission of the company, whether that's from their own experience, you know, perspective. In other words, like, yep, because they've been working in that field for so long, they have a level of expertise and they love to be able to give back and use that level of expertise to make a difference. And they do feel like the company is moving in a direction that they can get on board with. But they can also have like stronger passions maybe, right? Even outside of work, volunteer work, working on boards, like, you know, like, yeah, volunteer nonprofits, things like that, that really matter to them. And that's perfectly fine. So the key there though is, of course, we only have so many hours in the day, right? And so much energy and things like that. So navigating the dynamics of that can be tricky. But outside of that, if anything, I've seen those leaders really thrive in the workplace because they feel like they're filling their tanks in other ways as well, that contributes, yeah, to their sense of purpose and well-being and all of those other things I've been talking about.
That's very cool. Because I think about that even personally. Like the reason I do the Future of Teamwork podcast is I've got this fascination with what it feels like to be on a great team. And I'm always questioning, like, why aren't we all on more great teams? Or why did that great team fall over? Or just, you know, go in a different direction. So I often feel like the day jobs that I and my colleagues have in the businesses that we operate are really about helping bring people onto teams. But then I feel like the work I do in the community, like being a rugby coach, it's all about showing kids ways to get onto a cool team and behave as good team members. It's just that there is some synergy there.
Right, absolutely. And another thing I was just thinking about a client when you mentioned that, because I have a client who works for Google, but he also has a strong passion to coach women's soccer. Uh-huh. And so one of the things that we're working on is trying to figure out not just the, you know, how he can do both and kind of navigate that and family life and everything else that comes with that. But he's now at the point in his career where he's like, you know what, maybe I can combine the two. Maybe I can use my skills and, you know, everything that I bring to the table to be able to help on a bigger scale, on a bigger level, in an organization that supports women's soccer, you know, something, yeah, like that. So there's, yeah, so many different ways to go about doing that, and it's all a journey, right? You're never going to fully arrive. No. But that's why that experiment aspect of it is so important, because if you're open and you're curious and you're willing to experiment, you know, to the extent, of course, that makes sense, you're going to discover so many things about yourself, about, you know, opportunities that maybe you didn't know you had, and that kind of thing. So it's really fun, actually, to realize that there's so much more outside of the work environment that can really help inform that.
What I like about that too, Sharissa, I know on your TED talk on happiness at work, you a number of times you use this phrase, what I want, and you talked about like making it comfortable for people to be clear on what they want and, mm-hmm, to actually achieve that through work too is the way I took away from it. And that's certainly been my personal experience with coaches I've worked with as well. Yet that isn't typical in businesses. You know, most businesses are asking you, what do you want to be earning, or what promotion do you want to attain, but not what do you as a human want? Do you see that form a big part of your work with leaders, like the one you described where, hey, I want to coach more women's soccer, and okay, well, we're gonna talk about, yeah, helping you achieve what you want more broadly than just within the bounds and confines of your job description?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I always encourage my leaders, because I always say, like, having that people-focused approach to leadership matters so much, right? So what I mean, mm-hmm, by that is not just focusing on the actual work or how can I help my employees be more engaged, that, you know, the level of the productivity can go up. It's not just about that. When you look and when you engage with people on a personal level, on a people level, and really get connected with their own, and I love what you just said, right? So not just the what of what they want, but the why behind that. Mm. Like, what drives them? Why is it, you know, why do certain things matter to them more than other things in the work environment? You know, things like that. When you start to get curious, and that's why I love coaching, because you can, you know, have those deeper conversations and really go deeper with that. But you can do that as a leader, right? So, and I love helping my leaders to figure out, okay, how do I do that with my, you know, with my teams in a way where they're going to feel like they're truly cared for, and I truly do, you know, like what they say to me and how they answer those questions really do matter, not just from a work perspective, but just as a human. Like, I want to make that human connection as well. So I think that's a lot. Another thing that is so important for leaders to kind of balance, right? So not just to focus on from a work perspective. Yes, you're always going to have those work goals and those things you have to move towards and all of that. And yeah, there's a lot of elements of what we're talking about that will align with that and will help move in that direction. But it's so much more than that. When you can focus on the people aspect first, all of those other things start to become a lot easier and start to naturally fall into place. And I can tell you from my, like, just a quick story, one of the leaders that stands out to me, and this is going to sound so silly because it was something so small, but it has stuck with me all these years, is a leader who, I was a single mom at the time for a big part of my corporate career. And, you know, when I was going through that kind of internal struggle of my career and trying to figure things out. And so around that time, I had a boss who, you know, who knew I was a single mom, and he would always ask me about my daughter and things like that. And I remember one year, it was around Halloween. And he just happened to ask me, like, just, you know, in conversation, casual conversation, I didn't think anything of it. He was talking about, okay, what are you doing? Is she going to be dressing up? Are you going trick-or-treating? All that kind of stuff. And he was like, oh, you know, what's her favorite candy? And I told him, and I just kind of moved on, and I didn't think anything of it. 2 days later, I find this big, you know, thing of candy, the same candy that I was telling you about, on my desk with a little note saying, you know, go enjoy Halloween with your daughter. And I was like,
how awesome.
What? How sweet is that? That leader, we've been in touch all these years. He was at my wedding 2 years ago in South Africa. He flew all the way to South Africa to be at my wedding. And I was like, now those are the types of leaders that stand up. It's not the big, massive things that you can, that you do as a leader. It's just making people feel that they matter and that, you know, you care, you truly care for them on a personal level. And that makes all the difference on the business side of things as well.
Oh, I love that story. Thank you for sharing. That's a great story. Yeah. Is there a correlation, Charissa, between introverted leaders and servant leaders that you've observed?
Oh, great question. Yes. So there's a couple of characteristics of introverted leaders and servant leaders. And I think this helps not just, you know, to identify these things in ourselves, but also to start to identify them in our team members and how they're wired and, you know, how they tend to operate as well. So there's a couple of, I'll go through a couple of these characteristics. One is empathy. So introverts are known to be empathetic because they tend to be very observant. They're always taking in information in the environment. They're internally processing, making sense of things. They tend to be, you know, really curious in conversations. They're good at actively listening and engaging and taking in, you know, information that way as well. And then, of course, they're also introverts tend to be very reflective, deep thinkers along those lines as well. And then as far as the servant leadership part of it, it's a lot about just that curiosity and leaning in and trying to understand, you know, like genuinely wanting to connect with people on a human level and understand them so that you can best support them and help from that perspective. Yes. And then there's also that focus on service that kind of goes along with that. How can I serve you rather than what can you do for me? Obviously from a genuine perspective. So you want to make sure you're doing that from a genuine place rather than saying, okay, I want to do that because I know you're going to reciprocate and, you know, do something for me or the team or whatever it is.
Quid pro quo.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So when you come in from that perspective of servant leadership, in other words, how do I serve you and lead from that space? It just, you know, not only do your people feel more connected and committed to you as a leader, and they want, you know, they feel like there's somebody that cares about me in this space. And so they tend to want to, you know, like go above and beyond and be more engaged and involved and things like that, because you are that type of leader. But like I said before, it's not, you don't want to do it with that intention, right? It's more about you just care about them because they're a human, they're a fellow human. And it's, you know, you're there for a reason. And I always tell my leaders, you have such a pivotal part to play in the lives of the people that you have the, you know, the privilege of leading. It's not just from a business perspective, but even just on a personal level, because it's those leaders that really make their people feel like they're valued, that they're cared for and all of that, and want to serve them first. Those are the leaders that leave that really strong legacy. And those are the leaders that people remember, you know, years afterwards. And they have that ripple effect. That's one of the reasons I love coaching leaders, is because it has that ripple effect, right? So leaders have the ability, whether you have a leadership title or not, you have the ability to impact the people around you. That can change family dynamics. I've seen this happen too, where it changes the dynamics of those, you know, the families in those people's lives. And then it has a ripple effect through generations and, you know, and across the organization. There's just so much that can happen. So never underestimate, this is my little, like, you know, little soapbox here, but never underestimate the value that you bring to the table when you're aligned with who you are and just coming from that servant leadership perspective from a genuine way. You matter. It makes a difference. And people do absolutely notice, even if you may never know it, but it absolutely makes a difference because there are people that are, you know, like learning from you and admiring you and watching you, and you're leading by example, whether you realize it or not, and probably to a much greater degree than you think.
I really, just to play that back, I really like the way you draw not only the correlations between introverted leaders and servant leadership, but also the impact of that servant leadership being caring, being curious, helping others achieve what they want in a non-manipulative fashion, because it, you're right, they do take it home, they take it to their churches, sports clubs, yes. you know, family gatherings, and it has a multiplier effect outside of the organization. Mm-hmm. And I'd always looked at large organizations and felt like if there was a measure or a metric of how much good they were doing in the community at a very granular, very human level, yes. It would be so cool to see, because we often look at what's on the balance sheet, you know, how, and what's on the P&L, how much did a company contribute to United Way or some other, you know, right. good and well-intentioned event. But we don't often explore, well, what did the employees and the leaders of that team go out and do in their communities? It's like the off-balance sheet asset and yes. kind of, you know, benefit that's created.
Yeah, absolutely. And I touched on this on my TED Talk as well, as it relates to happiness, right? And having that yeah. sense of fulfillment
you did.
At work. So it's not just about the work that you do, you know, in your 9-to-5 and in your regular job, but it's also companies taking the opportunity to give their employees and their teams, because that's such a great team building exercise as well. It's like a bonus, right? But also yeah. giving them the ability. That's something that they can take pride in, and saying, I work for a company that gives me the opportunity to give back to my community in this way. And I feel you can feel that sense of, you know, belonging and purpose, especially when you do that in a team setting, when your team goes out
yes.
and goes and does that in a, you know, in a community setting. Not only are you giving back, you're helping to build that team, but it also just feels good to them. It feels like, okay, I'm in a place that values that. And if you value that as a, you know, as an individual, and you work in a place that values that and gives you the opportunity and flexibility to do that, that really matters to people. And I think they're even more, that increases engagement, right? And it just increases yeah. all of these other areas that obviously are going to ultimately impact the bottom line anyway. But I think when you focus on that and from a genuine, like authentic perspective, it does matter. And so that's a really good point. And I don't think companies focus on that enough.
No.
So, but that's a great opportunity.
But great leaders do. Great leaders do. And their
Absolutely.
Teams kind of play it out. I know you yeah. shared in the TED Talk that there was one company that was giving people 2 hours a week, which is a material number of hours to go and do the community work, which is super cool.
Yeah, I believe it was Bank of America.
That's it.
That was a few years ago now. So I'm sure there's other companies that are doing things like that as well. But yeah, that's so encouraging to see that they're giving their employees that opportunity, and they're recognizing how important that is and how it really does matter in their work environments to be able to do that.
Definitely. There was another piece that you touched on. You called it strengths. You also called it superpowers. So when you think about the superpowers of an individual and kind of shining a light on them, letting that individual get into that state of flow and use those powers a little bit more, how do you find that shows up? How do you identify it? How do you help a coachee or a leader, you know, harness it and take it forwards? Could you share a bit more there, Sharissa?
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you bring this up, because that is such a core component of that whole coaching process when it comes to team dynamics. And yeah. I'm a big fan of assessments in general, right? So assessments are good tools to yes. be able to tap into that. And of course, they're not all, you know, none of them are perfect. But at the same time, I think it gives some really great, great insights into some of those strengths and some of the things that people, you know, don't even realize. Also, 360s are another really great tool to get that the feedback from other people and to hear in other people's words how they, you know, what did they see as your strengths and what, you know, how they see you shine in the workplace and things like that. So there's a number of different things that we work on within the coaching practice that helps to put a spotlight on things like that. But as far as like a coaching conversation, those coaching conversations can be really powerful as well to unpack and unlock those things. So for example, as a coach, what I'm looking for when I have a conversation with someone to try to unpack like their strengths or their flow, their zone of genius and all of that, I ask them about different things in their life and when they felt like they were in that flow state, when they felt so energized that they could just keep going or when they felt joy, like in the type of work that they were doing, even if it was, many, many years ago. So asking the right questions to unpack that, I think, is another component of getting closer to the strengths. Because a lot of times if you ask somebody without them having done all that work, if you ask them, what are your strengths? It's hard, right, for us to answer that. It's like, okay, we don't know.
Or you answer what you think they want to hear, I'm really good at managing the P&L.
Yes. Exactly. And it's so interesting because I'm actually in an interview process right now at my company. I'm hiring for a role. And that's one of the things that I do in that interview process very early on is I ask, you know, depending on the role, I'll ask them to do these free, like I said, above free strengths assessments. So there's a couple of different ones that I really love. The Myers-Briggs, of course, because it does touch on that introversion versus extroversion. But also like StrengthsFinder, there's lots of different ones, and then DISC and things like that. And so what I like to do is have a combination of those and then kind of connect the dots between them. So I have just personally for myself, what I've done over the years is I think it was 5 or 6 different one of the, you know, different assessments. And I basically just charted out. I actually have a board sitting right just here to my right with, and I just call it my strengths board. And so with each of the assessments, what I did is I broke it down and I said, okay, with this assessment, this is what it's telling me was my strength and so on. And then I started to connect the dots. What are the commonalities? What are the themes that are coming out? And so that helped me so much to get to the core of, you know, of how I connect and my strengths and what I bring to the table. And that helps me also shape the type of coach I am and how I approach that. So I think those assessments, to answer your question, I think those assessments can be really helpful. And there's a ton of free ones out there as well. Yeah. Of course, again, they're not all perfect, but at the same time, you can always do that and then take what's helpful to you. And also you can test it out, right? So if you're getting certain, if you're getting, say, your top 5 strengths and you're like, oh, I don't know about that. Like there's 2 or 3 that I don't really resonate with. I always have my clients going, you know, ask the maybe at least 5 people, right? So at least 5 people that you're close with, whether it's a working relationship or a personal relationship, ask them questions and I help them to come up with maybe, you know, 3 or 4 questions that they can ask the people closest to them so they can validate that and say, okay, what are people around me seeing as my strengths, as the things that I do well at, what they would recommend as like an ideal career for me as an example, right?
Yeah.
So different things like that. So tapping into the 360 process at work, so getting that feedback on a personal level as well, asking the people that are closest to you, and then also the personality assessments and strengths assessments and things like that can be really helpful. So just off the top of my head, those are 3 things. There's a lot more that goes into that leadership zone of genius. But yeah, I think those, if you start in those places, I think you'll get a lot of great insight into your strengths. If you're not, you know, like
absolutely.
If anyone listening is not sure.
And I love the way you tie it to joy and energy, because that's a great telltale of you're on the right track. Dom Price and the team over at Atlassian have their team's playbook, and they have a small exercise in there called the 4 L's. Have you seen that one?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Oh, it's brilliant. And it ties into what you just shared. So the 4 L's is, hey, Charissa, in the last 60 days, what did you love doing in your job, which is the joy and the energy? What did you loathe doing?
Okay.
Because that's what the energy drain is, right?
Yes.
And then it was, what do you long to do more of, which might be something else that's not in your role that may tie to that superpower or zone of genius. And the last one, what did you learn? But it's just such a quick, easy, you know, 10-15 minute conversation, check in, particularly if, you know, you don't have coaching for all of your team members, you can use it as kind of a coaching primer in conversation with teams.
Oh, I love that. That's so powerful. And I love all the L's. I'm a very like process person.
Yeah, it helps you remember, doesn't it?
It helps you remember all the steps. I love it. That's fantastic.
Well, this has been a wonderful conversation, Charissa, for everything from, you know, values and awareness of leaders through to, you know, the groundwork and agreements of teams. I like the way that we kind of dived into that very crisp sort of definition of what values, capabilities, and objectives are and how they interplay. I thought that was super helpful. And then this whole piece around mindset and curiosity, I thought when you shared how we should be as leaders asking team members what meaningful work is to them, that's a real gift, and it ties really neatly into that latter part of the conversation around how we're helping people find their you know, zones of genius or their ways of bringing value to the wider community, not just their team. So such a wholesome and fun conversation. Thank you for the contribution today. And if any of our listeners want to find you and learn more about the work you're doing with Leadership Mastery Alliance, how do they best find your content and contact details?
Well, thank you so much for asking, Dan. And first of all, thank you so much for this opportunity. It's been so fun. And I can't believe we're at the end of our conversation
already. I know.
The time went by so fast. but yeah, if anyone is is curious about the work that we do, or even just has any questions based on the conversation today, feel free to email me at info, that's INFO, at Leadership Mastery Alliance. And if you want to find out more about the company and, maybe how we can support you, or just you're just curious in general about the work that we do, you can go to leadershipmasteryalliance.com. And also, I would love to connect with anyone listening on LinkedIn as well. So I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. There's a lot of free resources and videos and different things like that I have available there and on my website. So if you just search for my name, Sharissa Sebastian Deppen, you'll find me on LinkedIn. And please go ahead and connect with me. I would love to stay in touch and connect that way as well. Thank you so much, Dane.
Awesome. It's been great. We'll talk soon.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,